Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan on this Monday now afternoon. Down with the King topic of the day. It is the divisional round, BT. A lot to take from yesterday. The thing that we started talking about was it was a legacy game, or build a legacy game going into the weekend between Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And you watch the game play out, and really, Lamar wasn't great in the game. Obviously, the two turnovers, more than he's had in a game this year. But it wasn't his fault that they lost. Josh Allen really didn't do much of anything yesterday, but yet they won. So just the way that we look at these games, singular games, deciding singular athletes and individual performances and their legacy, I do think it's incorrect in a lot of ways that we do as sports talk fans.
I agree, and it's only gotten worse over the years because I don't know. I mean, you tell me, and you were around the guys back in the day, working with Mike and Chris. I remember, you know, even early Mike and Chris days, I don't remember them ever talking about this legacy stuff.
Yeah.
Not like this.
I don't know if it was as, sensationalized maybe as it is now, as immediately as it is now.
I don't think it was. I think if I had to probably circle a few things where it really started to take off, I would say probably... this is an odd one, but in real time, it was a big one. The whole Tiger Phil thing, like, could Phil break through? What would Phil's legacy be if he didn't win? If you don't love golf, that doesn't interest you. But that was certainly where it was getting discussed a lot. Obviously,
also different
Jack
because,
and Tiger.
It's also different because that is on the individual.
Yeah, no question. That is a very good point. And
maybe LeBron Michael started this, like, new age. You know, there was talk back in the day about Ewing not having a ring or whatever, but maybe LeBron Michael really expedited this, plus social media and just like the sensationalization, is that right? Whatever it is, of all this stuff and overreacting to each individual performance and, oh, Lamar can never win the big one or Josh Allen can never win the big one. Now, Allen's going to be tested again this week, but it's not just Allen, obviously. The point is, it was the Ravens versus the Bills in a game where the Ravens didn't play their best.
Yeah.
Therefore, the Bills ended up winning. So does that mean that Allen, his legacy should be greater than Lamar Jackson when we look back at this?
Of course it shouldn't, but it's going to get hijacked. It's going to get distorted by a bunch of people. I mean, listen, if the Ravens were 7.5 or 8.5 point favorites, you know, like some of these other teams over the weekend, like the Lions were at home, and Lamar would have lost that game, well, that's a little different. I mean, it was basically, what did it go off? Did you actually bet the game?
The Ravens?
Yeah, was it point?
I had it money line, but yeah, it was like 1.5.
Yeah, I knew it was in that neighborhood. I didn't know if it changed at kick there. But, you know, it's basically a flip-em game, man. Flip a coin. Who's going to win? I don't know. You flip the coin 10 times, probably Ravens 6, Bills 4, or vice versa, depending upon how you view certain things. So it's not like it was this colossal underachievement. It was a very close game. There were circumstances that will get ignored, and that's how you and I started the show. Too often people get lazy and they forget the things that happen that really, as we drop it at the doorstep of player X, and in this case some at the doorstep of Lamar, you know, you can't forget the other factors, which a lot of people do over the years.
Yeah, and that was a great game. Obviously, could have been even better had Andrews, caught the ball and got it to overtime potentially. But either way, the Bills moving on to take on the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. The Commanders had the biggest upset of the weekend. We told you last week, I felt like there was going to be an upset. I thought the Texans were more likely to get the upset. I thought Washington could keep it close, but I didn't think the Lions would ultimately lose that game. Could see them losing a championship game in Philadelphia. The fact that the Lions lost that game, you talk about how the Ravens go home a little early here, but still, at least they lost on the road to a team that was their equal. The Lions were the one seed, and they got destroyed at home to a team that shouldn't have been on their own level.
They lost a turnover battle 5-0. I'd love to see the percentage, not even playoff games, how many teams have been -5 in that column and actually won a football game over the years. It's got to be less than 2-3%. It's got to be, because how many teams even turn the ball over 5 times, let alone, you know, win when they do that? You know, but the difference with the Lions, and this doesn't matter to Lion fans as they mourn another, you know, kick in the stones here. But, you know, Jared Goff, nobody really expects that much from him. Not like a Lamar or a Burrow when he plays in a big game, or, of course, Josh Allen. We know the name. So, Yeah, that was a stunner. They played very sloppy, and you know it is a reminder that if you don't have the guy, like, you know, guy, and this kind of pertains to the Giants loosely, like Jared Goff is good. Jared Goff sometimes is really good, and Jared Goff can get you to a certain spot, win you a lot of games, maybe like Darnold moving forward, maybe a better version of Darnold. But when it's really time to cut the nut and elevate and get to a conference championship game and beyond and win, Goff's not that guy, and yeah, it was on display over the weekend.
Yeah,
Terrible loss, dude.
Eagles with and that was a good game. Rams.
Eagles didn't surprise me. I really thought the Rams were going to be right there. That was a good game.
Rams had a good showing. That was a good game, no doubt about it. And then, of course, the Chiefs. That was the other thing we touched on a little bit before, where you talked about Mahomes and not enjoying necessarily watching the Chiefs. And for me, it's about Mahomes and the way that he plays, where he's trying to manipulate the referees and draw the flags and flop a little bit and toe the line out of bounds just before he gets hit, you know, just before he goes out, takes the hit, draws the flag, or tries to run and the last second go down and then the flag comes. So for me, that's why I'm a little down on Kansas City. Look, he's one of the greatest to ever do it. Of course, he's had great success, Kansas City, in the midst of a dynasty run here. But that was the other thing, where that first game, Texans kept it close, or close enough for some to cover, with the line being at 9.5. We picked the games at 8.5, but it went up to 9.5. So that safety ended up covering. But just Mahomes, I think, in general, BT, and the Chiefs getting the benefit of the whistle in a lot of these games.
Okay, so getting the benefit of the whistle and manipulating the referees, there's a fine line right there. Mm. And we talked about how Mahomes is very, very adept at kind of, you know, walking that line and just kind of almost like faking like he's going to stay in bounds and then going out getting hit. Like he's really perfected that. I think in a lot of ways we should laud him for that. Like, why should that be a criticism? Now, it might not be the conventional way of going about business, but in real time, Sal, to be able to calculate that in real time, when you're running upfield and you're like looking over my shoulder, who's coming from behind, who's getting ready to ear hole me, you know, from the secondary that I'm not looking at, like, I don't know. I get why some people don't love it. Same with some flops in the NBA, though that's kind of gone. I think it's part of his skill set. I almost think it's an amazing thing rather than something we hold against him,
right,
with Mahomes.
Right, but to me it's just a little soft.
Chief.
Yeah, exactly. Right, you're right. He's brilliant for being able to take advantage of it. Only he can, and I think he's perfected it.
He has.
Because
he's a good enough athlete to do it.
He can do it. One of the few who could do it and get away with it, but it just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
And the fact that the refs are too foolish to see through it at times. Like, if you're tucking it and running with it, I get it. The league is going to try to protect you. But once you decide you're a running back, hey, fair game. Like, you can't. Troy Aikman was saying it, and I thought he said it the best. Like, if you're going to be a running back, then you're going to get treated like a running back. Mm-hmm. Once you decide to leave that pocket, you're a running back. You can't then all of a sudden get the roughing the passer call when you decide to tuck it and run and playing games with the defense, which is what Mahomes does to perfection.
I got to be honest. It is absolutely impossible to officiate in the NFL. And I know that they've got different checkpoints, and it's not a crew of one or two or three or four. There's a million people there. You got Sterator, who I love, in the booth, checking in with Romo and Nance. They got this right. They got this right. It is so hard to do that job. And I'll give you a great example. You know, think about the helmet-to-helmet hit anywhere.
Yeah.
Like linebacker over the middle, tight end, helmet-to-helmet, bang, there's the penalty. You watch any special teams play, it is always helmet-to-helmet.
I know.
I mean, a guy on a kickoff, a guy on a punt. I don't mean like if you hit a guy in any signal fair catch. I don't mean that. But if a returnee or returner, you know, catches the ball and goes through, invariably, he is absolute. He's getting popped in the head by somebody's helmet. They never throw the flag.
Yeah, I think leading with the head is different, and that's, you know, targeting, whatever. But a lot of these tackles do have helmet-to-helmet
every time
contact.
I see it in slow motion, I'm like, oh, man, that's dangerous, man. But you can't police it out because they're too big, too strong, too fast.
All right, let's get back to the phones here, BT. NFL calls off the divisional round. We got Championship Sunday coming up this weekend. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Jason is in North Bergen. What is this here?
North Bergen.
Okay, there you go. See, you have the screen. Why is it so big on here? I got to minimize
that.
Anyway,
you're saying North Belgmar.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with that.
Somebody had it maximized. Anyway, go ahead, Jason. Sorry.
What's up, boy? No worries. What's up, boys?
Hey, Jay.
New York's got to get involved with these calls sometimes in our playoffs. Like, they should have picked up a couple flags, but that's not why I called. So the Lamar Jackson, the guy's amazing during the regular season, and I feel so horrible for him during the playoffs. He always does, like, dumb things that he doesn't do during the regular season. When it was 2019 and they went for two, all he had to do was lollipop it to Isaiah Likely. That ties the game. Now, we don't know if the next touchdown is the same. We don't know what happens after that.
True.
But all he had to do was lollipop it. If you watch the replay, Isaiah Likely points to the sky like, why did you throw it low at me? The linebacker was right there. So he has that.
Turnovers. I mean, Jay, I'm just asking, is the ball wet?
No, I know, but a lollipop over the linebacker, that's all he had to do.
Yeah.
The fumble, to me, was the one that changed the game. 7-7, second quarter, and thank you for the call, Jason.
Do you think that was a bad snap? Because one of the callers said it was a bad snap. I didn't think it was that bad a snap.
I need to watch it again, but in real time, I don't remember thinking it.
I don't think so either.
And he had the ball anyway. He was trying to make something happen. It wasn't anything down the field. He got too cute, trying to evade the tackle, put the ball out there carelessly, dropped it, and the whole field position flipped, even though Justice Hill went and made the tackle. 7-7. Second quarter, Ravens going in turned into an easy TD for Buffalo on the other side. After that, it flipped the field and just changed the game and the way maybe that the Ravens called the game or how to play the game, kind of chasing the rest of the way after that fumble. It was a huge play.
How about the Ravens electing not to defer to open up the game?
Yeah, I didn't pay too much attention to that.
Yeah, they took the ball, they scored.
Yeah, I like that. I didn't even realize that. I know that they took the ball and scored. I didn't realize that they chose to do that. Because you're right, it's just most teams automatically defer.
I don't think I saw the Jets take the ball once this year.
Yeah,
I think they deferred every single time.
Which I hate when teams do that. Andy Reid did it once a couple years ago, bothered the hell out of me in the Super Bowl. Not in the Super Bowl, in the championship game against the Patriots, where the Chiefs had the better offense. And I think Reid deferred. And I'm like, why would you give...
Shove it down their throat, get a quick seven.
Take the ball.
I know.
And take the lead, which is why I like that Baltimore did that. And by the way, playing with a lead, much different, especially with these two teams. And that's why I said that fumble cost really the Ravens the game. Chuck is in Maryland. What's up, Chuck?
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? Love listening to you fellas. Quick question. I'm in Maryland now. I'm a Long Island transplant.
Got it.
So here's my I got mad respect for both Lamar and Josh. I just don't understand why you guys are hating on Josh a little bit, because you didn't have to do that much because you had a great running game going. If Lamar had Derrick Henry running up and down the field for 200 yards and Lamar didn't have to do much other than not make mistakes, make a play here, make a play there, would you guys be saying the same thing?
Yes.
I love Josh Allen. I'm not hating on Josh. I don't think Sal is either. There was one point now. Listen, there was nominal yardage. And Chuck, thanks for the call. I'm sure you've got us up on the Free Odyssey app down there in Maryland. Thanks, buddy. You know, there was he had 10 pass sequence. He had 8. In a row, and he only had the 2 X's, but most of the passes were like, 4 yards, 7 yards. It was a nominal amount of yards for the amount of attempts that he had at that point. But there's weather conditions, and there's also something to be said for doing something and staying in your lane and not trying to do too much. How many players over Brett Favre was guilty of this, and you can name others, great players, all-time players, who made critical mistakes in big games by trying to do too much. Sometimes the easy play is the right play.
Right, but Chuck, that's exactly our point. So if Lamar Jackson and the Ravens won this game and Derrick Henry had 200 yards rushing and he was the reason why they won the game, it would be looked at nationally like, oh, wow, Lamar could finally get over the hump. Right? Like, if that were the case, would everybody be saying, well, Lamar can finally get over the hump and they want a playoff game on the road, against Josh Allen, but it was because of Derrick Henry? I do think that the national perspective would still be Lamar beat Josh Allen, even though it should be, well, Derrick Henry and the Ravens were really the focal point. So it's not, we're not minimizing what Josh Allen did in the win, but to be like, oh, MVP, MVP. Allen didn't do anything yesterday, and his team won, which is why it shouldn't just be about the individual performances, how we judge their legacy.
Yeah, no, we share that page. I would say, let's say if Lamar and the Ravens won yesterday and Derrick Henry was the absolute main reason why, then I think the ultimate grade on Lamar gets suspended for a little bit because, the headline, so let's say Henry finishes 3 touchdowns and just throw 177 yards, whatever, and you had a pretty pedestrian game from Lamar. Yeah, we all know if that would have happened, that it was Derrick Henry who pushed them forward. But if then the next game, the AFC Championship game, Lamar thoroughly outplays Patrick Mahomes, what happened in the divisional round gets offset a little bit. So it's generally the bigger sequence. Even take Eli Manning. Take the first run. It was the first game was in Tampa. The second game was in Dallas. Third game was in Green Bay. As we know, that first game against Tampa was very low scoring. He didn't do a ton. The second game against Dallas, I remember the first half was very low scoring. But when we look back, and then, of course, he made big plays, Super Bowl and in Green Bay. But now it's like, Eli was the MVP. That's going to get him into Hall of Fame, and it will. But those first couple of games, he didn't do a ton.
How about Ben Roethlisberger winning that first Super Bowl where it was a defensive thing?
It's a good example. But he still reaps the rewards of being the champion.
Back, and he's got two Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Or whatever the case may be with even Tom Brady, where they won it with the Bucs. They won that game because of defense.
Uh-huh. Tom Brady's first.
Yeah.
With the Patriots as well.
First and last, right. So that's what I'm saying. It's a fine line where it shouldn't just be about, the Ravens lost and Lamar can't get it done in the postseason again. Although I do think in this game, he did make that big mistake that turned out to be the difference, in the game. Now, again, Andrews catches that ball. Are we having that conversation?
That's all forgotten. Well, especially if they come back and then they win in overtime. That's forgotten.
Right. Frank is in Scotch Plains. What's up, Frank?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Hey,
listen, I've been watching football a very long time. I'm 60 years old. I love the NFL. I'm a big Giants fan, and I respect the game and the integrity of the game. Okay, but what I've witnessed the last 3-4 years with this guy Mahomes, I'm sorry, guys, you got to hear me out. You look at the tape. There's no way any other quarterback in the league gets the rough and the passive calls like he does. It's obscene. The whole nation, there are a slew of NFL fans that agree with me. It's not just fans. It's Aikman. It's Rex Ryan. It's a lot of media folks. They see it. It's almost embarrassing. He's playing with flag football rules.
But I don't think he's alone, Frank. I think you're underselling it.
I understand, but then he gets the call, though.
Yeah, but
he
so do others. I got you.
Why does he always get the call in the conference final when they need an extra 15 yards? It's a joke.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he should, and I'm not saying that he doesn't. I'm not saying I don't agree with you. All I'm saying is I think the scope of criticism is a little more wide. Like, the NFL, to me, it's just not the same, man. Now, I'm also not the same. I've got children who are very busy. It's not like, the first 35, 40 years of my life, I just did whatever I wanted. And same with you. Of course, we love it. We watch it. It's our job. And there's still elements of the NFL that are great. But, more and more, but it's not just the NFL. I think the NBA's not nearly the same. I don't know. I don't know that I quite have the same feeling watching sports that I did 7-8 years ago.
The sport has evolved. The game has changed. Like, we've known this for a while where they're protecting the quarterbacks. I just think it's gotten to a ridiculous level now. And here's the biggest difference. And this is with Mahomes first and foremost. When you have so many quarterbacks now who are not just sitting in the pocket and they can be evasive and scramble and run and be the athletic or show the athletic ability that they do, there's a fine line now between protecting the quarterback who is a sitting duck getting drilled late or whatever versus a guy who's going to tuck it and run with it. And now as a defender, what are you supposed to do? You're taught to take this guy's head off and tackle him and make sure he doesn't get another yard. But if you touch the quarterback too hard, you're going to get a 15-yard flag.
Yeah.
And it's just not right. There's got to be an in-between to where the defensive players are allowed to hit a quarterback that declares himself a runner. Like, I'm not saying you got to be vicious or targeting or this or that. You should be able to know, watching the games, what was egregious, what was not, what was roughing the roughing penalty, even if it's not roughing the passer, if he becomes a running back.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't have it to where all the rules favor the quarterback to where you basically can't touch him, even if he's running down the field.
And again, I'm with you. The one thing, though, we're not 1-2 years into this. I mean, Tom Brady, had the benefit of the doubt really ever since he got his knee split in a million pieces, whatever they were. I don't know, 07 away. Mm-hmm. I mean, 08, whatever the year, I forget, whatever. Yep. The year.
Matt Castle.
Castle comes in and goes 10 wins. The quarterback's been treated very differently. So when you say, what are these guys supposed to do? They're taught to take the quarterback's head off. No, they're not really taught to take the quarterback's head off anymore.
Still got to tackle them.
I understood.
Especially when they're running.
I understood. But there's a heightened awareness and a different element of coaching that has now permeated the game because the coaches are younger.
Right.
They're growing up with this now. It's more normal to them than not. And they espouse that to their team.
Right,
and their team's got to react to that.
Fair enough, but real time, full speed.
Not saying it's easy.
A guy's running at you as a defensive player. You now see some of them thinking. instead of just hitting.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're thinking, oh, well, Mahomes is coming at me. What do I do? Because if I touch him, I'm going to get a flag. If I don't touch him, he's going to run down the field and score a touchdown. Like, it's a very fine line that you shouldn't have the defensive players having to think about.
Yep.
Player running with the football, player's going to get tackled. What about too hard? Did you drive him to the ground? Like, enough's enough.
I've got two. I don't know if it's perfect, but I got two solutions for you. We saw this. Was it Kenny Pickett? Who? Somebody did this in college, I think in a bowl game. It may have been Pickett. So if you are a runner and a quarterback, you're out of the pocket and you're looking to chew up yards, and you feign going down, and you don't, that's a 15-yard penalty on you, number one. Like, call it the deception. Come up with a fancy name. Number two, if you are presenting to the defender that you are going out of bounds willingly, and you then dance back. Now, it's a little nebulous. Yeah. You'd have to refine this because you're talking about subjectivity. Yeah. I get that. It's not objective in certain cases. It's going to be subjective. But then you dance back inbounds.
Or toe the 15-yard
penalty on you for being deceiving.
Yeah, okay.
Honestly.
Well, like a flopping, faking, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I mean, something's got to be done.
Protect the defense a little here.
Or just go to two-hand touch and call it a day.
I would never watch.
I'm just saying.
I know you're being facetious. Yeah. It's getting more and more like that. I wouldn't watch.
We're getting there. BT and Sal on the Fan. More your calls when we come back. BT and Sal back on the Fan, continuing with your calls here. 888-808-1019. How about the possibility, BT, of Matthew Stafford being available? He played a heck of a game. I thought, hey, was he perfect? No, but still, in that spot, on the road against the better team, you know, the snow coming down, L.A. team, warm weather team. Stafford, I thought, was pretty good yesterday. Obviously, a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Would you look at him as an option for either the Jets or the Giants?
Not for the Giants, no. No, and at this point, I think if you're going to roll it back with a veteran, even though Stafford's younger than Rodgers, I would just come back with Rodgers for the Jets. I don't really love the timeline for Stafford with the Giants, and I'm a big Matthew Stafford fan. He could dissect, you know, a secondary. His arm talent is still tremendous.
Right.
I don't know how that fits the Giants, though, now.
Well, I mean, you were saying you want to stop, but you got to have a quarterback. Who's it going to be?
Yeah, but what's he going to pay him?
I don't know. But so where's he going to go? Just to a team? I mean, he's older now anyway. You think he's going to be a final piece to a team? Again, the quarterback situation is so difficult.
Well, it's, you know,
because if you don't, you really want the next, you want a guy who's got the potential to be the franchise guy, not just a stopgap guy. I don't think the stopgap guys work long term. I feel like that's been proven before. Even with the Vikings, with Sam Darnold, like they're going to be more excited. Even though Darnold had tremendous success this year, the Vikings will be more excited about having J.J. McCarthy back next year and seeing what he can be. There's a good chance McCarthy in his first full season does not do what Sam did this year, but the hope is that eventually he could get better, I guess, in the bigger games and be better. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that McCarthy's going to go 15-2 next year.
Yeah,
no,
well,
or whatever,
what I mean.
Or 14-3, whatever it was. No, I don't think so. I think you look for those individual flashes, maybe a little more poise with a game in the balance, and you know, maybe more signs of a higher ceiling early on. You know, I look at the Stafford thing. I look at Stafford and I say, well, I think he'd be a great fit in Pittsburgh. And by the way, who was it over the weekend? What team reached out? They were rebuffed for Tomlin.
Yeah.
Who was that again? I saw that. I'm forgetting right now.
It was Chicago. Wasn't it Chicago?
Yes, it was the Chicago Bears. Yes. So at least the Bears did what I was imploring the Jets to do. And hey, make them say no. You made the call. They said no. At least now you know you got your answer. You don't have to worry about maybe missing a very, very good coach. That's just what I wanted the Jets to do. At least I tip my cap to the Bears for doing it. Now, where can I see Stafford going? Again, I don't think it makes much sense for the Giants.
I like the Steelers there. But still, if from a Steelers perspective, BT, would you go down that road? Like, I know from an outside perspective, it's like, oh, well, the Steelers are always close to winning. Yeah, why not a veteran quarterback go there? People were putting Rodgers there, like the same formula. Mm-hmm. But if you're a fan of the Steelers, aren't you like, hey, enough's enough. I want a real, a young quarterback with the potential to be that guy.
I think they would probably feel that way about Rodgers. I think they'd feel that less about Stafford. I mean, I can't read their minds, but Stafford's a couple of years younger, so.
You think they can win a Super Bowl with either Stafford or Rodgers next year? The Steelers?
Probably not.
So then, that's what I'm saying. So then why bother?
Yeah, but I don't know that they're thinking that way, you know. And if they're not, then there's your answer. I mean, where else could he fit? He could fit for the Colts. He could. I mean, obviously, Titans need a quarterback, but he's not going there. They're not good. You know, I mean, the Panthers, Bryce Young actually showed some real signs. Maybe the Saints.
Yeah.
Maybe the Saints.
They still got Carr under contract, but who knows?
They do, and I feel like Kelly Stafford, who's very involved in the media, I can see her embracing a place like New Orleans. Not Tampa. Baker's their guy now. Denver's set with their young player, Bo Nix, not Kansas City, and not the Raiders at this point, not the Chargers, not the Cardinals. I mean, how about this? What about the Niners? We think about Rodgers. Maybe they don't settle this Purdy stuff. Maybe Rodgers to the Niners.
Yeah.
Why not Stafford?
Yeah, and I do feel like the Niners at least would have a chance to win the Super Bowl.
Me too.
More so than the Steelers. Maybe it's just NFC. Maybe it's just feeling like the Niners would be better off. You know what's weird, man? You look around at the league. Tell me the quarterback situations that you unequivocally feel good about in the NFL moving forward.
All right, you ready? I'll do this very quick.
Like, not like, okay, they're in a good spot. Like, even I'm just looking through the teams here. Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Bryce Young or the Falcons with Penix. Like, I think those are exciting spots.
Possibilities.
With some potential. Hoff just said something in my ear that we get some breaking news. What do you got, Hoff?
Yes, we do. There was the Blue Jays signed somebody.
Who?
Anthony Santander.
They did.
Yes.
Wow.
How many years?
I was going to say short one, long one, 4 years.
Doesn't say an agreement yet on
who
on
has
the,
it?
Morosi.
All right.
Morosi with the Blue Jays.
That means he's going to the Pirates.
Yeah, are we sure? Are we sure it happened? I mean, Ohtani.
Hey, listen.
All right, so wait.
Give him credit.
He said Blue Jays signed Santander. We have no idea about how
nothing
many years.
No years, no nothing. Even Heyman supporting it, but there's no years. There's no details.
Do we think that, good job, Hoff. Do we think that this maybe fuels more of the Vladdy trade, or maybe they just try to go and get Pete now and just go all in and say, let's try to do something here?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So forget Vladdy for a second.
Yeah.
How do you think that this impacts the Pete Alonso pursuit?
I don't think it dissuades them from doing. They have been trying to get money away for years, and they really only have two really, really, really good sticks. And I like Santander. I didn't want him for the Yanks. I don't love him for the Mets either. So I'm not going to start saying, oh, he's amazing. He can hit some home runs, hit 235, 240, can't run, average fielder. Switch hitter with pop. Okay, there's value there for sure. Now, if you bring a Pete, now, and you put Vladdy at third. I don't even know if Vlad would be amenable to that. But if you have Alonso at first base for Toronto.
Or who's their DH? I don't know the Blue Jays roster here.
But think about this, Pete. Sal, if you have Pete at first base, you have Vladdy at third and Santander in the outfield along with, you know, Bichette and, you know, one or two other decent players. Like, that suddenly, that could be the second best team in the American League East. The Orioles have done nothing.
Yeah, Red Sox got to do more. They need to go get Bregman. Hoff, what were you saying before about the pursuit of Sasaki? You were saying that they
So they sent three players to go recruit Roky Sasaki.
The Blue Jays did.
The Blue Jays did. Do you want to guess the three players that they sent?
Oh, this is what you asked me when I left the air. I said save it for the air.
Yeah, so
it's obviously funny slash weird.
Do you want to guess real quick?
Let's take a guess. Hold on a sec. Do they have to? I'm guessing that they weren't all Japanese.
I'm going to guess. Well, Kikuchi's got to be one.
No.
Okay.
I'm saying no. That Vlad, and to me, that would be telling if Vlad was not one. If he was one, then that would be a better sign.
Joe Carter? Like, are we going down memory lane here?
No, it's on the current roster.
Oh, he's on the current roster. Oh, what do you got?
Bo Bichette.
Right.
Okay. Chad Green.
Okay.
Dalton Varsho.
That's what they thought was going to get Roky Sasaki.
They sent them to Japan?
They said they were part of the recruiting process for Roky Sasaki.
What?
Yes.
Toronto, what are they doing?
I don't know.
We have no info on where or what they expect Santander to be. Like, meaning if he's a D. I want to know two things, obviously. How it impacts Pete Alonso / Vlad Guerrero. Because if the Blue Jays are now out on Alonso, and again, we don't know. We're just going through hypotheticals
here. My guess is they're not, but yep.
Well, if they're not, and I can understand you saying that, but then where would Pete play?
First base. Put Vladdy third.
Then I'm going to move Vlad to third.
I don't know. Maybe just get him in here and you have Pete DH. Pete plays first twice a week.
So is Pete going to go be a DH
if
now?
If nobody else offers a deal, he's got to go play somewhere.
Or is the interest in Pete as maybe a backup saying that, man, we're going to look
at
trade Vlad.
That could be possible. Both are potential possibilities.
Right. And we know that the primary goal of the Blue Jays, at least it's reported, that they want to extend Vlad Jr.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're trying to extend him, and he doesn't want to do it,
yep.
Then at some point they got to say, okay, he's not coming. We got Santander. Let's trade Vlad, maybe bring in Pete. I don't know. I'm trying to go through the...
I think that you're spot on in terms of how you kind of weigh in this. I also, and I know that we just asked you, we don't know yet, I need to know, which will further shape my opinion, is it a one-year deal for a good AAV, or is it like 3-4 years? If it's 1 year, they very well might be saying, hey, Bring him in for a year. You know, maybe we just go nuts. We get Pete 1 year with a player option for year two with a high AAV, and we have a really fun season, and we convince Vladdy to stay.
Right.
That could be one possibility.
I have one rumor here, but I don't like trust a source.
Well, what do you have rumor wise?
Ari Alexander, he's like a reporter from somewhere out in Mizzou. Or he's a Mizzou lump. Well, whatever. 5-year deal, they say. But no money yet. Still
five
has
years?
Yeah.
Sports anchor, reporter. Mizzou,
yeah, Missouri's a good journalism school, too. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's
verified.
I mean, 5 years for Santander is for a switch hitter. I wouldn't do it, but it's not nuts. And quite frankly, for Toronto to finally get somebody to take their money, they probably had to tack on an extra year.
5 years?
For I definitely wouldn't. I wouldn't give him three.
I mean, all right, if money's not going to be an issue, we'll see. I'm just reading another one. Melanie Newman, who was with Baltimore, so she'll know Santander. Santander was pretty proactive in how he trained in the off-field around Toronto series due to the harder turf that he plays on. Always gravitated toward places like Houston, blah, 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 Rogers Center, at least his home. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know. I'm fascinated to see where they're going to play him and what this means now for their next move. Does this mean they continue to try to go? Like, if they got Sasaki and Santander, then I'd be like, all right, well, the Blue Jays are in play and they're going to at least keep Vlad to the deadline to see where they're at.
Yep.
I don't think this move in isolation means anything for Vlad. It might mean more for Pete. We just got to determine definitively how much the contract is and where he's going to play.
Yep.
And then I think, you know, then Vlad will decide maybe Pete, unless Pete would be amenable to being the DH.
The more I think about this, I feel like they are doing this with the intentions of not trading Vlad now. Give it a swing.
Right.
That's my gut right, now, then, the more I think about this.
Fine, and then what does that mean for Pete? Because Pete might end up without a chair.
Meaning, I think
stops.
Pete could still be in play for Toronto. Yeah. Meaning, I think that they are... Listen.
Well, what if it's not, then? Could he still be in play for the Mets is kind of what I was getting at.
I feel like that ship has sailed.
Me too, but think about it. If there are no teams, like, you think, okay, well, maybe Toronto looks promising, and then Boris is trying to milk them, and then they can't come to an agreement, and all of a sudden, like, you know what, we're going to go get Santander, and we're going to keep Vlad for now, and Pete maybe doesn't want to go be DH. I'm not saying there aren't any other teams, but, like, that was the one that we thought, hey, Blue Jays might be a realistic possibility.
Yes.
Because it was the first legit, like, report other than the Mets that we heard.
We heard Seattle, maybe, never got an offer. Yeah, they need some offense. That never materialized. Yeah. I meant to share this with you earlier, though it's much more pertinent now. So I'm at the St. John's Seton Hall game on Saturday, and I see Gary Cohen.
Oh.
The Seton Hall.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, look how you perked up.
Yeah, I love Gary.
Yeah, no, Gary's great. Yeah. Gary's great.
You said hello and all that?
Of course. Okay. I've seen him for 20 years doing these games. I always say hi to him. I always make a little small talk. Gary's good.
Yeah.
And I said, how many? We're in the press room. We're sitting at the. I don't want to jump
you went up to him?
He was walking by and he waved. And many years I go up to him. And if he sees me first, he says hi. Absolutely. Very cordial. I like Gary. And
I'd be intimidated myself.
But you said that last time. I don't know why.
I know. Well, I just...
Intimidated over what?
I don't know. I'm insecure. Okay, good.
All right. I said, dude, how many people are going to ask you about Pete tonight, right?
Yeah, right.
I'm like, get ready. He's like, I said, how many people are going to be crying that he left? And we were talking about a few things, like very quick again. I was eating. He was walking. And as he was walking away, he says, he's not gone yet. And then he said, price keeps going down.
Right. That's kind of what I'm saying.
I got you. Is that more hope? I mean, I don't know.
It's not like the Mets didn't offer him a deal or a fair. I thought it was a fair market deal. I said before, we said this on Friday, I don't think he's going to get a better deal elsewhere.
He's not.
So if another team comes off the table, and again, I don't know. I'm trying to look up right now the Blue Jays roster and the projected team, but of course I can't do it because it's these websites are ridiculous. But anyway, I'd be curious to see how if we get more details on the Santander stuff. And by the way, we're getting close. Like, it's 3 weeks from today. Pitchers and catchers report for the Mets. Like, if Pete wants to start playing, he's going to have a deal, you would think, somewhere.
I just hope Pete's staying in shape. Isn't that the kind of body where if he has a lazy offseason, I mean, that's the kind of thing that's going to take him 2 months to get back into shape.
He's been working out with Sean Manaea. They had some videos there.
I saw that. How's he look, though?
I mean, he looked fine to me. I mean, yeah, looked like Pete.
Just not as good as Derek's hands, of course.
Yeah, you stop with it.
Yeah, you're the one who told us.
Yeah. I wasn't marveling at the hands.
I know you were. Where have they been? Well, you missed that the other day. Free Odyssey app. Just find the segment, Jessica right. Alba, Cheater.
BT and Sal on the field. We'll take more of your calls when we come back. 888-808-1019.
All right. T-Wolf 2025 in style. And by the way, Hoff whispered in my ear. He says he's got a question about Pete. So I want to let you do that. We'll do that coming up next. I'm very curious. Hopefully it's not a dumb one. Is it a good one? Or is it a dopey one?
It's a really good thought out question.
Looking forward to that.
And we'll get back to the quarterback conversation too. We pause that. We'll get back to that in a little bit.
100%.
Well.
This is a song right here, Sal. Yeah, listen.
Who's that?
Sponge.
Oh, Sponge. Okay.
I mean, Sponge. What did I say? Bush?
No,
did I say Bush or Sponge?
I thought you said Sponge.
I think I said Bush. I meant to say Sponge.
I know. I thought you like Bush.
You do look like Bush.
Yes, he does.
Listen to this. Just Sal, get this up, though. This is like, I want to run through a wall. I want to do something aggressive here. It's a good song. You know what I mean. Come on.
I don't know about running through a wall, but yes, I do know.
Now, did you pick that song or did Hoff?
I did not.
Look at that. Hoff tickling BT a little bit with that song. All right, before we get back to the calls here, 888-808-1019, Heyman just had some details on this. You ready?
Oh.
You want to take a guess?
Yes, I'll take a guess.
I'm not going to hold you to it because I would have no idea what the ballpark. I'm just curious what... You think the total, I'll give you the years, and then you guess the money.
You'll give me the years.
Yes.
Give me the years.
5 years for Sondheim.
So it is five.
There. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to say, we can start looking at qualifiers, probably around 20.1, if I recall. I'm going to say that the Blue Jays had to overpay a little bit because they're the Blue Jays and nobody takes their money. It's not going to be 30. It's going to be, I'm going to say about... let me just say 30 times 5 is 150. I'm going to say 5 years, 135.
Okay.
Something like that.
So now if I were guessing this, much like you off the top of my head, I'd probably be like, okay, the first initial math would be 5 years times, let's say, 22 million a year. So where does that get you at? If you do 5 times 20.
That sounds about 130.
Yeah,
no, it sounds about 110, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, about 110.
So, all right, so maybe I'd guess like 5 years for 120. Heyman says Santander deal is for 5 years plus an option more than... $90 million.
Wow, that's cheap.
Yeah. Now he says more than $90 million, but
yeah, like, but it's not like it's more than 90 and possibly also more than 170. When you say more than 90, it's 93. It's maybe 98.
Yeah,
it's 96.
So again, it brings us back to now. Again, I can't wait to find out the final details on this. But if you do that quick math,
is he counting the 60-year option?
I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, all right. Possibly ballooning to 90,
maybe,
or is that in the built-in five guarantees?
Otherwise, $18 million a year. But still, you're getting five years. So maybe for Santander, the appeal was total.
Yeah.
Commit 5 years, 90 versus 1 year, 23 or
Listen,
whatever.
Listen, not everybody wants to keep bouncing around the country.
Yeah.
You know, so even if it's 5 years and you leave 8, 10, 12, 15, even 20 down on the table, perhaps... There's value. I don't know if he's married, whatever, if he has kids, but there's value in being somewhere for 5 years at least.
More than $90 million. I would hope so for 5 years. But
yeah.
Then again, is he an $18 million a year player? Anyway, point is back to Pete.
I know.
If Santander is getting 5 years, roughly $90 million or more than, like, what do you think Pete is going to get? Again, that's a contract. And I'm not saying Santander's better than Pete, but he certainly could do more things. He switch hitter defensively, maybe a little more versatile. He did hit 44 home runs a year ago.
Yeah, Pete's had a lot of big home run seasons.
And
Santander never does that.
I get it. No, I get it. Pete's more impactful, but still, like if you, my point is that 5 years, 90, like.
That's
the Mets offered Pete 3 years, 70.
Yeah, and we thought it was 3 years, 90.
Right. So think about 3 years, 70 versus 5 years, 90. Like, Pete's getting a lot more than that.
And I think he should because he's the more established player.
Okay, right, but I don't think this bodes well for
Pete. I don't think it does either. What I think and what I think should be true, and I'm not even a huge, you know, Pete believer, you know that, then that probably tells you that it's going to have to be an unexpected team for 1 year, big money, reestablish market value, which I still don't think would change anything. He'll only be a year older next year. Or the Mets and maybe Pete can find common ground if he can swallow his ego.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And we're going to find out. All right, Hoff, real quick before we break, what was your question about Pete BT?
I was questioning because here's the thing. Pete Alonso hasn't got any offers, right? There's been no market, even though now all of a sudden there's signs that maybe the Mets and Pete could still be working out. Do you think the rest of the teams in the league, all 29 of them, are basically saying, I'm not going to compete with Steve Cohen. If they really want somebody, they're going to go get it. So I'm not going to be used to be jacking up the price. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit back until I know they are moved. They have moved on from Pete Alonso, and then I'll start working on bids.
I've thought about that. A matter of fact, I said that. What was it pertaining to?
Yeah, you did say something like that.
Yeah, like I wonder.
Who the hell was it?
Well, it wasn't Vlad. Oh, God, that's going to annoy me.
It wasn't Vlad, like, potentially being in the... I don't know. There was something there.
No, it was Vlad. It was Vlad. Yeah, I said that last week. It was Vlad, where if you're Toronto, why would you trade him to the Mets? Well, you would trade him to the Mets if it's communicated to you, hey, listen, no matter what you offer this guy, we're coming $50 million more, right, or what, and if you match, we'll just keep, we really want Vlad Guerrero. So it probably behooves you to take 3, 4, 5 prospects because we have more money and we're going to spend it and we're going to win the bid. That's exactly what I said. So I think that that is a mindset that very well could or already has permeated Major League Baseball that dissuades teams from doing things that they might be inclined to do because they know that Steve could or will slam the door in their face.
I don't think that that's the case with Alonso. I just feel like Pete priced himself way too high, and a lot of teams just lost interest in Pete. And I don't believe he's going to get a better offer than what the Mets offered. So then it's going to be on him to decide what situation, if he does have other options, fits him best that he would want to go for.
I think that's a part of it too. And the other thing, just specific to Santander, even we could quibble about the AAV that we're surprised. 5 years is 5 years, as opposed to three with Pete, right, with the Mets.
A 90 homegrown. Mil, more than 90 mil is 90 mil. Like,
yeah, but think about this. If you're and Santander is not a good outfielder, and he's not anything special on the bags at all, but he's got more, and you guys know, he's just got more juice as an athlete than Pete. That's clear. He's not an elite athlete. He's just got more juice than Pete. So for Santander over 5 years, once that juice further erodes, well, then you could put him at first base.
Yeah.
Pete, who is pretty much juiceless, where do you put him when his skill set begins to... Exactly.
And by the way, before we break, a final note, I was looking over the Blue Jays roster. Not that I know all these specific positions, but there's not enough on the roster. So I would assume Santander will be an outfielder for them, and that this would still have them in play if they are trying to go big.
I think they are.
For Pete as a DH.
So you're on the same page with
me. Yeah, I would.
They're going to load up.
Now, I don't know that.
I think they're going to load up.
But I think so. Now, what I think is really going to happen is Vlad's going to say, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not going to sign an extension here. And then that's going to force their hand to try to trade him. We'll get back to your calls on the NFL or the baseball, whatever's on your mind on this Monday. BT and Sal.